We've been on an amazing journey of generosity the last 24 months at our own church, where our pastor just said to the people, try the Lord, test the Lord. He talked about a generosity ladder in which there are some of you, he said, who've never ever given to the Lord's work. There's some that give occasionally, some give intentionally, but not a tithe. Others tithe and others give extravagantly. So he brought a stepladder out on the stage and he said, he labeled each of the steps. And he says, all I'm doing is challenging you as Christians to just take a step up and just try the Lord. It's been an amazing thing. Over the last 24 months, we've had 2,300 new people give for the very first time. Never had given before that we had a record of, and they've given. Overall, by the end of February, they will have given $30 million over and above what we would have expected during the same time. And out of this generosity initiative, we've been able to build orphanages in Kenya. We've been able to help sex trafficking victims in India. We've been able to build churches in New York and San Francisco, and on it goes. We've been able to do so much. We've literally, the pledge was, whatever you give over and above our operating budget, we're going to give away and help people all over the world who have need. That giving principle has operated in our church, and the testimonies that have come out of it have been a tremendous encouragement to us as ministers. God says, test me and try me. So, in 2 Corinthians 8, Paul is talking about the Macedonians. Generosity in the midst of adversity. He said, first of all, that generosity, and if you've got a... Are there any extra listening guides that are just laying there? There are a couple over here. If anyone needs any... somebody need a listening guide for notes. Diane, if you can kind of pick up, if you've got an extra one laying around, why don't you hold it up? Diane will pick them up, get them to the people that need them. There's no use. If you're not a note taker, be honest, you know, don't just stare at the blank page. But we'll get those around to the folks who need them. But the first thing is that generosity is initiated by the grace of God. Now, oftentimes it's like that bucket of water. We think, I made it, I earned it, what I give is on me, and if I don't want to give, I don't have to. And so we think it's all about us. But actually, in the Bible, generosity is talked about as a grace gift. In other words, God is a giver, for God so loved the world that he gave. God demonstrated his love toward us in that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart is. So throughout the Bible, it's talked about in discipleship terms. It's talked about in grace terms. Think about grace for a second. The principle that Jesus used consistently in his parables, over half of his parables deal with money. The principle that he uses consistently is this, that it all comes from God and we are simply stewards. We are managers of what God provides for us. Heard about a guy, and you know, again from Bowlegs, I've seen this quite a bit, guys driving pickup trucks with a dog in the back, right? And I'm not into that. I've never had a dog athletic enough to keep his balance if I were driving. But I've seen this, and so it was going through the drive-in at a fast food place. Big truck, big dog in the back, right? And so you go through the general thing. You give them your order. They take your money. They give you the bag. Next person in line. But when the big bag came out to the truck, to my surprise, it went back in. And then, surprisingly, out of the drive-through window came a hamburger in the air, and the dog grabbed it out of midair. And like two gulps, it's down. Out comes another hamburger in the air. The dog jumps up, grabs it, two gulps, it's down. He's had lunch. Little bag comes out of the window, truck drives off. And I thought, you know, that is a great picture of grace. The dog didn't earn it. He didn't drive the truck. He didn't pick the restaurant. All he had to do was receive what was freely given. And isn't that our relationship with God? Someone said, actually, it was the chaplain of the Queen of England in a meeting of world leaders used grace as an acrostic, G-R-A-C-E, God's riches at Christ's expense. That's grace. We don't deserve it. We don't earn it. It's all freely given by God. And so he starts off with the discourse on giving by talking about grace. Look at the grace God granted to the churches of Macedonia. What are the churches of Macedonia? It's Philippi. We get the letter of Philippians. It's Berea. We talked about the faith of the Bereans. And it's the Thessalonians. We get the two letters of Thessalonians. Interestingly enough, these churches were some of Paul's biggest supporters. He talks about how the Philippians, no one outdid them in terms of supporting him. In this particular instance, he's actually taking up an offering for some starving saints in Jerusalem. Jerusalem, capital of Judaism, home of the temple. Someone converts to Christianity, they often lose their job, they're kicked out of their family. You had saints in Jerusalem. There was a drought in that area at this time, and so you had saints in Jerusalem starving to death. And so Paul thought what a great picture it would be for the Gentile churches, he's writing to the Corinthians, the Gentile churches to take up an offering for the famine relief of the Christians at Jerusalem. So that's the context. And he said, I want you to know about grace. I want you to know what God has done for the people of Macedonia. It's all about grace. Chuck Swindoll made one of my favorite quotes on this. He said, God isn't about raising money. He's about raising children. And generosity is something that puts us in the image of God. The second thing that we learn is that generosity is inspired by inner resources, not outer circumstances. Notice what he said. He said, of the churches in Macedonia, during a severe testing by affliction, and there are different translations of this, grinding poverty, severe crushing defeat. Basically, we know historically in this area there was a series of civil wars, and war always causes economic displacement and hardship. There was a series of natural disasters. Now, he's writing to the people of Corinth, who were some of the wealthiest people in the ancient Middle Eastern world. Corinth was at the axis of a east-west trade route and a north-south sea route. They had all kinds of money in Corinth. So he's using the people of Thessalonica, and he says, don't think the people of Thessalonica are being generous, or the people of Macedonia are being generous because they're so well off. He said they're being generous in a deep time of poverty. James Agee, in the book Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, actually gives a lot of stories about women. One of those was a woman he met during the Deep Depression. He went to her house in Appalachia. He said it was really a shack. He said it had a dirt floor, it had no heating, had no indoor plumbing. And so this lady sitting in what we would call the deepest poverty in the middle of the Great Depression, he posed this question, ma'am, if someone came by and wanted to offer you money to help you out, what's the first thing you would do? She thought for a second, and she said, I guess I'd go find a poor person to give it to. Think about that. That's kind of the same parallel that you have with the Macedonians. They were tremendously impoverished, under great duress, and yet they were finding people less well off than themselves. It's interesting that we think if we have financial problems, somehow we're exempt from a generous spirit. But that's not what the Bible says at all. The Bible consistently, Old Testament, New Testament, it's proportional generosity. In other words, you're not... in fact, James says, don't give the chief seats to the rich people because you think they can bless you. It's all as God has prospered you. It's all on a percentage basis. Even in the Old Testament, there was the sacrifice for the very poor person was like a pigeon. When they were taking up money for the tabernacle, they said, you can bring gold or you can bring goat's hair. I mean, how hard would it be? Just go scrape a goat, you know, and get some goat's hair and bring it in. That's a pretty poor offering. But they were treated equally. Whether you bring goat's hair or gold, you contribute. So generosity is not based on what you have. It's based on what God has put within you. John Markle was a member of my Bible study class at church, and he works for a brokerage firm, so a lot of his income is based on commissions and based on, you know, year-end bonuses. And oftentimes he doesn't even know what he's going to make until the year-end comes in and the firm totals up their accounts. And so he came from a very small church to First Baptist. He said at the small church, he didn't ever think much about giving. He said, I could put a $20 bill in the plate, and everybody around me was like, wow, that's a heavy hitter right there. You know, this is great. He said, I come to First Baptist, and the pastor at that time was John Bisagno, started talking about tithing, 10% of your income. He said, that was just so out far out of the range of my possibility, but I decided to take a challenge. And he said, when I was doing my taxes at the end of the year, I realized that my contributions to God's work had been equal to my mortgage payment, my total mortgage payment for the year. And he said, I looked at that and I thought, wow. So he said, I did what every red-blooded American would do when faced with such a thing. I decided I need a bigger house. So he said, I went out and doubled my mortgage payment. I paid twice as much. I got twice as big a house. And he said, I didn't think about it. I just, again, kind of took that generosity challenge. And he said, surprisingly, the next year when I did my taxes, my giving was again equal to my mortgage payment, even though it was twice as much. So the old thing, can't outgive God, that's not a come on that God has to reward you with U.S. dollars. It's not a quid pro quo that you give money, God's got to give it back to you again. It is God has made us to be generous people, and he expects us to follow in his image. I read a study by James Mora, I'm sure if I'm pronouncing that name right, but he's a researcher for the National Institutes of Health. And he said they did a study on asking people to think of giving away something to someone else, to their favorite charity or to a person in need. And then they did brain stimulation studies on that. And he said, we found that the same area of the brain was stimulated with the thought of generosity and giving as, get this, as was stimulated during sex or eating their favorite food. And so the researcher said this statement. He said, we concluded in our research that we're hardwired to be generous, that is something that stimulates us and gives us great satisfaction. So God's not asking us to do something that we're not hardwired to do already. It's inspired not by inner resources. It's not how much you have, but it's not by outer circumstances, but by inner resources. Next, I find in the passage, in verses 3 and 4, is one of the most astounding statements that I read in Scripture. He said, I testify. This is like Paul talking to a court reporter, right? Paul says, I'm giving you a record, a legal document here. I testify that on their own, according to their ability and beyond their ability, they begged us insistently for the privilege of sharing in the ministry. Now, that's a euphemism that is variously translated gathering a gift or making an offering, sharing in the ministry to the saints. Now, what's the context? It's out of their abundance of joy and deep poverty. You don't see those two phrases go together a whole lot. Deep poverty, abundance of joy. But they literally insisted, they begged us for the privilege of being generous. The point is generosity is instructed by obedience, right? So some people really need clear-cut instructions. I heard about a guy that thought he would do something really nice for his wife, so he's going to wash his own sweatshirt. But he's never done this before. So he goes into the washing machine, and he looks at all the settings on the washer, and he yells back, Dear, why should I set this washer on? She's at the other side of the house. She goes, well, what does the sweatshirt say? He said, University of Texas? So some people need detailed instructions, right? They need to know exactly what they're supposed to do. So generosity is instructed by obedience. The very act of giving actually instructs us in our Christian life. Martin Luther said that he called it the third conversion. It's interesting. He said the first conversion is a spiritual conversion of the mind. It's where you realize that heaven is a free gift. It is not by our own works. Ephesians 2, 8, 9. For by grace are you saved through faith. That's not of yourselves. It's a gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. So he said the first conversion is a conversion of the mind where you realize it's not a matter of stacking up good deeds that's going to get me to heaven. It's going to be in trusting Christ and what he did on the cross. That's the conversion of the mind. The second conversion, Luther says, is a conversion of the will or the body, and that is the conversion to service, where you realize that Christianity is not about just sitting and soaking, but Christianity is about getting out and doing, going on a mission trip, helping someone, an elderly person, fix up their house. My son did a nonprofit in Waco when he was a student at Baylor University, and the nonprofit's mission was to go out and help elderly people just do routine things around the house that they could not do. And he said he went into this one lady's house, and it was getting dusk, and he said, what do you need me to do? And she said, do you mind replacing a light bulb? He began to flip on the lights in her house, and every single bulb was burnt out. She did not have the ability, nor did she have the wherewithal to be able to. So she was in the dark. That's service. That's going and helping someone that has no ability to help you back. And so Martin Luther says the second big conversion that happens for a Christian is the conversion to service. And then he calls being right related to resources as the third conversion and the final conversion. It's the toughest thing for us because we tend to think of that money is mine. It's that little quart jar. It's all mine. I'll give a token to God, but the rest of it, I can do anything I want to do. Ron Blue, who does Christian Financial Concepts, Ron Blue, who wrote the little handbook, Master Your Money, he said, spiritually, it's no more holy to buy a pair of running shoes than it is to put money in the plate. When you realize that it's all God's and every financial decision becomes a spiritual decision. Let me repeat that. Ron Blue said, it's no more holy to buy a pair of running shoes than to put money in the plate on Sunday morning, because in both instances you're saying, this is God's money and this is what He wants me to spend it on. This is what He wants me to spend it on. So generosity is instructed by obedience. When we literally give money to God, we're taking a part of ourselves and giving it to Him. It's an instruction in lordship. We use the word stewardship and steward quite frequently, but it goes back to feudal days when you had a landowner, and then there were serfs or managers or whatever that worked the land. They understood it was all owned by the landowner, but they were responsible for producing income off that land. So to have a steward, you have to have a lord. There has to be someone that you're giving obeisance to. So it's an instruction in lordship. It's an instruction in worship. Think about the Old Testament. Every act of individual worship was based on giving, right? Every act of individual worship, whether it was a wave offering or a drink offering, or an animal sacrifice, someone took part of their produce, they brought it to the temple then sacrificed that. And so the whole sacrificial thing in the Old Testament was based on giving. It was based on generosity. It was based on taking a part of what I have, or what I've done, or what I've raised, and giving that to the Lord's cause. You could make a case that we're following in that same pattern when you are trading your life for a paycheck, right? Today you'll go back to work. You're counting at some point that your employer will pay you. And that represents a portion of your life, your skill, your talent. So when you are giving that to God's work, you're taking a portion of your life, what you've produced. You're not raising a lamb or raising a goat or giving a turtle dove, but you're taking a part of your life in giving it to God's work. So it's an instruction in worship, and then it's an instruction in unity, that together we all can do more than any one of us. There's not a lot of room for Lone Ranger Christians. You know, even the Lone Ranger had a partner, right? And so in Christianity, when we put money in the plate or we give to a Christian nonprofit, we're saying, I'm uniting with others. I can't build an orphanage in Kenya, but I can unite with others in doing that. I can't build a building for a church that's devastated by a tornado, but I can unite with others in doing that. So it's an instruction in unity. Generosity then is increased as we give our lives away. He said, not just as we hoped. Instead, they gave themselves especially to the Lord and then to us by God's will. So money literally, if you get that right, it's going to reflect your inner priorities, and it's going to affect your whole life. Philip Yancey, after the big downturn in 2008, did a book on our relationship to things, relationship to money. And he said there are really only three questions that are germane about money. Three questions that impact us all as Christians. Number one, how do you get it? How do you get it? Are you getting it justly? Are you getting it ethically? Are you getting it legally? You remember a lot of the problems of 2008 were caused by people that were gaming the system and predatory practices towards others. So how are we getting the money? Is it money that's justly earned? Secondly, what are we doing with it? Do we feel like the money that we've earned is to indulge ourselves in bigger and better, you know, more and more stuff? Is that what we're doing with the money? Or are we doing it to bless others? So there's really just an A or a B answer to all these. How are we getting it? What are we doing with it? Thirdly, is a question we don't ask near enough, is what's it doing to us? What's it doing to us? In the book, The Treasure Principle, Randy Alcorn compares greed and jealousy and envy, products of money. 2 Timothy talks a lot about that. The product that money brings in ourselves. He said it's like a monster that takes control of us, takes us away from God, takes us away from the things of God. And he says when we write a check, give our money, practice generosity, Randy Alcorn's words, he said it's like driving a stake into the monster's heart. The very act of obedience changes us. And it makes a statement of priorities in our lives. The moving right along, I'm going to get you out on time, I promise. Generosity is inhibited in three ways. I'll close with this. Number one, when I talk to people and they are really offended by talking about money, you know, they're offended by talking about generosity, there are usually three things that I get from them. Number one is comparison. David, you don't understand. I've got bills. I've got an aged mother. I've got kids going to college. God knows my financial situation. He knows the average American, unfortunately, makes a dollar and spends $1.10, and we finance it on credit. And so oftentimes we get ourselves into a situation where we don't feel like we can be obedient. But it's always comparison to someone else, comparison to my situation. Let me tell you the reasons I cannot be generous. I think in America, we have to understand that about 50% of the world's population makes less than $500 a year. If you think we've got financial struggles here, go visit overseas. Go to an orphanage in Kenya. Go to a slum in India. Go even to Mexico and see. People think we're all rich. And so Paul said it's not about comparison. He said if you're going to compare to Jesus. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, back to that word grace, though he was rich, he's in heaven sitting on a throne. For your sakes, he became poor, so that through his poverty, you not might become rich. You can't keep score by U.S. dollars. The American way is my worth, my significance, my security, it's all based on U.S. dollars. He said, no, that's not it at all. Your worth, your significance, your security is based on him. It's based on Jesus Christ. So if you're going to compare to the right thing. The second thing is what I call consequential analysis. Big words. I know the big word truck drove up when I wrote that. But he said, it's not that there might be relief for others and hardship for you. You know, Paul said, it's not like we're taking money out of your pocket to give somebody else. This is not like grandiose socialism or anything. But it's a question of equality. It's a question of doing what's right. And oftentimes, when we get past the point of, yeah, generosity is a good thing. I think it's probably in the image of God. I think it's something that's a spiritual thing. Then we get to the point, but how are they going to use it? You know, I don't, you know, you hear things like, what are they doing up at that church? You know, and so then we begin to look at, I think the preacher's overpaid. I don't think we're getting a good return. Blah, blah. So we go through this whole consequential analysis of how is my gift going to be used? Paul is telling the Macedonians, look, give it to me. I'm going to take it to the Jerusalem by the people in Jerusalem. But once you've given it, you've got your blessing from the Lord. And you've got to trust me to get it to the right spot. That's the whole nonprofit world. And you know, I'm totally weighed down with the burden. I mean, 365 days a year, are we doing the best with what we've got? I mean, our church has been tremendously blessed. A lot of 2,300 new givers this last year. But are we always doing the best? And we're always working on that. Diane keeps minutes in our finance committee, and she knows we spend hours talking about these issues. But the issue for the giver is not consequential analysis. Think of the Old Testament farmer. The Old Testament farmer knew that he wants to give a sacrifice to the temple, so he raises that lamb all year long, grooms it without spot, without blemishes, gives it the best food. It becomes a family pet. He takes it to the temple to give his gift, and what do? They slit the throat and throw it on the fire. Show me the logic in that. How can the Jewish farmer say that was the best use for that? Well, it was the best use because he gave it to God. And ultimately, your generosity is going to be between you and God, not between you and the finance committee or the church's auditors or the pastor or the nonprofit's board of directors. It's going to be, this is what God wants me to do with this, and I'm going to be generous in obedience to him. The last thing is criticism. And Paul says, we're taking this precaution so that no one can criticize us about this large sum administered by us. I said things have an A and a B answer. Oftentimes, we are inward focus or outward focus, A or B. We are stingy or we are generous. And we want to be working toward the light side. We want to be working toward being made more in the image of God. Roger Menzel is very active in our church. And he came to me in a moment of honesty one time. And he said, David, I've really struggled with this whole thing of generosity because I give to political campaigns. I give to things I see need to be done in our government, in our city. But he said, I've been convicted that I've not given near enough to the Lord's work. And the verse that just got a hold of my heart was when Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be. And he said, so I've been in a position of standing back, criticizing the church, criticizing what the church has done. And God just got a hold of my heart and said, your heart's not in it because your treasure's not. You don't have any skin in the game. And it really changed his whole attitude when he came to grips with this idea of generosity. Speaking of grips, I'll close with this. Little boy, well-to-do home, was playing with a quarter and his mom's antique vase, and sure enough, the quarter dropped into the vase. So his little hand could fit inside there, and he grabbed the quarter, but when he made a fist, he couldn't get it out of the vase. And his mother came in just at the moment where he was bringing the vase up and was going to smash it on the table to get his quarter out. She said, son, what on earth are you doing? And he said, I cannot get my quarter out with the vase intact. I've got to break it to get my quarter out. She said, son, let go of the quarter. Turn the vase over. It'll come back to you. I think God may be saying that to some of us today. Turn the vase over. Don't break it. Don't split the sheets with the church. Don't get mad at your pastor. Don't get mad at me. I'm just the messenger. But just see what God is saying to you about this issue of generosity and how you are related to your possessions.